Thank you, Prem. Thank you, Sai Prakash. And dear listener, Sai Ram from Prashantinilam, the most happening place on the planet, as I always say. And yes, it indeed is the most happening place on the planet, because this is the most love-charged place on the face of earth. The place where pure love in a concretized form lived and loved, stayed and smiled, walked and joked, spoke and sang and soaked the hearts of one and all for over 8 decades. In fact, in 1950, when the Mandir was built, Swami asked all the close devotees to suggest names for the new Mandir. But in the end, it was Swami himself who christened it as Prashantinilayam, the abode of supreme peace, the seat of supreme peace. And he went on to explain how this place would become that powerful space on earth where agitated and confused minds would find peace, not just peace, but eternal peace, permanent peace. And Swami laid down the pathway to this permanent peace, and he said, from Prashanti, one moves to Prakanti. From Prakanti, one journeys to Paramjyoti. And from Paramjyoti, one finally merges in Paramatma. So it is Prashanti, Prakanti, Paramjyoti, Paramatma. From peace comes this profound effulgence, and from that we journey into the supreme light, and then you and the light become one. Well, in some ways we see that happen every day in Prashantinilayam. We see so many people going through this process once they step into the holy presence of this divine Hamlet. And this is precisely the reason why so many congregate in this sacred space every single day. In fact, this morning I was speaking to a young devotee who arrived from Mumbai after staying there for 2 days, and the first thing he told me is this: Bishu, the peace that I can feel here, I cannot find it anywhere else. I remember talking to a teenager from Chennai, Vignesh. He's in his 10th grade. And he comes to Prashanti off and on. And when I asked him once, what is it that you find in Prashantinilayam that is not there in Chennai? And without battling an eyelid, he simply said, peace. That is what is Prashantinilayam. And Prashantinilayam now is slowly gearing up for the forthcoming big festival in a couple of days from now. We are going to have this sacred festival of Guru Purnima, and it is going to be a week-long celebration. It will begin on July 8th with an education conference, and July 9th will be the Ashada Ekadashi. On 10th, you will have the sitar recital by Sri Prabir Bhattacharya, the illustrious sitar maestro. On 11th, there is All India Samiti Conveners Meet. And on July 12th is the D-Day, the Guru Purnima celebration day. That evening there is a concert by famous Sri Kadri Gopalna, the great master, the pioneer of playing Carnatic music on saxophone. And it doesn't end there. On July 13th there is gratitude program by nursing students of Bhagwan Super Speciality Hospital Whitefield, and a cultural program by devotees from Bali, Indonesia. And finally, on July 14th you have an overseas choir by devotees from Russia and adjoining countries. So from July 8th till July 14th, Prashanti is going to be a beehive of music and devotion, prayer and submission. In fact, the festival of Guru Purnima has always been a very significant event in the Prashantinilayam calendar. In a sense, it marks the beginning of the Prashantinilayam festival calendar, because it is from this festival that the students of Baba schools and colleges begin on their journey of becoming an indelible part of the Prashantinilayam ashram and activities. And without the students, can any festival of Prashanti Nilayam have that charm, that same fervor, that same color and joy? In fact, if you look back, it was on the occasion of Guru Purnima that Swami unfurled the golden chapter of his education mission in 1971. On the Guru Purnima day, Swami inaugurated the magnificent new building of the Anandpur campus, the first institutions, one of the very first institutions in the education mission. And it happened in the presence of the then President of India. And what Swami said on that day is as prophetic as it is profound. He said, India is being forged into a bhogabhumi, into a land of luxury, a land of skyscrapers, tin food and air conditioning and television. Indians are being transplanted in other soils and encouraged to grow without roots. And that is the reason why I have decided that this college has to be inaugurated on Guru Purnima Day, on a Guruvar, on a Thursday, as a Gurukula, the hermitage school of ancient India in which the highest ideals of life were instilled by personal example and guidance by the Guru to the eco pupils to imbibe. So this is that significant occasion in the Prashanti Nilayam calendar. And if you look even further behind, it was on the occasion of Guru Purnima in 1963 that Swami revealed to the world that he is indeed the Shiva Shakti avatar. In fact, many important announcements about Bhagwan's mission and important appointments by Bhagwan have all happened during Guru Purnima. It was on the occasion of Guru Purnima, the last Guru Purnima in 2010 of his physical sojourn on earth, when Swami reconstituted the board of the Sri Sathya Sai Central Trust and gave away all the powers to the trustees. Until then, he was the sole trustee of the Sri Sathya Sai Central Trust. Swami giving so much importance to the observation of this festival, therefore, to my mind, is non-trivial. There is something for us to ponder on these, on this very fact. And in the last week, on this hour, I shared an anecdote how when a student asked Bhagwan, Swami, what is the best relationship that I can have with you? Swami assertively said, if you want my relationship with you to be permanent, then regard me as your guru. Take me as your revered master and be a steadfast pupil. Then this bond will last not for a lifetime, but for lifetimes together. So this is what Bhagwan revealed. This boy was finishing his education in Bhagwan's institution, and he wanted to know how to keep this connection going, how to strengthen. And this is what Bhagwan declared to all mankind through him, I would say. So this is what we started off with last Thursday, and then we went on to dwell on the attributes of the Sadguru. Who exactly is the Sadguru? What are his unmistakable characteristics? How do we understand his words, his gestures, and most importantly, his teachings? Well, this is what we had begun to discuss in the previous session of Outside, Inside, Deep Inside, last Thursday, June 19th. And today, we will continue from where we left off last week. And I'm really grateful to Bhagwan that today, joining me in this session, is a very esteemed member of Bhagwan's education mission, Sri Venkateshwarlu sir from the Sri Sathya Sai Higher Secondary School, who has been serving in Bhagwan's school in Prashanti Nilayam almost right from its inception. And he is a treasure house of beautiful moments with Bhagwan. So he will be with us on this hour today in this last leg of Thursday Live from the studios of Radio Sai.
Tune into Sai.
Spend the day with Sai.
From 6 a.m. to 9:30 p.m. on Radio Sai Thursday Live.
Radio Sai Thursday Live.
Stay tuned.
So welcome to Outside Inside, Deep Inside. It's Team Radio Sai's Bishu. The time in the studios now is 8:50, and yes, it is the time for the second part of what we were discussing last Thursday on the Sadguru, the preceptor unparalleled. And as I just mentioned, today we have the opportunity to have with us in the studios Sri Venkateshwar Lu. Thank you so much, sir, for being with us.
Sai Ram.
The last time when we started off discussing on Bhagwan as the Sadguru, I want to tell you how it all began. Because it is the time when we prepare ourselves and think so much about the forthcoming festival. And I thought that we really need to dwell on Bhagwan as the Sadguru. And in fact, this is one topic which always fascinates me. Because I always feel that whether we consider Bhagwan as a mother, as a father, as a friend, however we may relate to him, what he is ultimately to us is he's a guru.
Yes.
Because ultimately all he wants is, even if he's showering so much love like a mother, or he was disciplining us like a father, or if he's giving us that affection and comradeship like a friend, but all the time he is only interested in our, not any other growth, but only spiritual growth. And that is the focus of a Sadguru. That is the focus of a Guru. So that is something which I am so convinced about. And I love dwelling on Bhagwan as the Sadguru. And you know, I was thinking, okay, how do we spend more time thinking about it? And what happened was, I just randomly opened Satya Sai Speaks, and my eyes fell on the 1985 Divine Discourse on Guru Purnima. And when I opened that, Bhagwan very beautifully had started that discourse with the sloka, Brahmanandam Paramasukadam. And then Bhagwan just took each word of the sloka and through that explained the characteristics of the Sadguru. So if you agree, shall we dwell on those different aspects of the Sadguru as Bhagwan enumerated, just taking this powerful sloka?
Very much. Because he manifested all those characteristics in his personality.
Absolutely.
Every interaction which he had either with a student or with a teacher, with the purpose to guide us in the right path. Many times he has not revealed it, but the lessons have come in course of time. Sometimes things were very clear when that particular conversation took place or the experience given, but sometimes it took time for people to decipher what actually Swami wanted to convey. And as you rightly put it, he only wanted our spiritual growth. So every small thing which he has done, he actually took us in that particular path, showing us what is right in life and how we should lead a good life, exemplary life, so that we are able to achieve the ultimate goal of life.
Wow. If you can share one or two instances, sir.
As Swami repeatedly mentioned, my life is my message. And this particular sloka amply reflects all the characteristics, starting with Brahmanandam, Paramasukhadam, Kevalam Jnanamurtim, Dvandvatitam, Gagana Sadrisham, Tasya Madhyadi Lakshyam, Ekam Nityam Achalam, Sarvadi Sakshi Bhutam. You take any aspect, we have innumerable examples which amply prove that he is being the Sadguru. I just recollect one beautiful incident,
sure,
which happened. How we say that he's beyond pain and pleasure, and he keeps reminding us a true sign of a devotee is that he takes both the things in life in right perspective.
Correct.
He has exemplified that particular aspect. I recollect in the year 2003, Swami had that hip fracture, and we were very pained to see Swami going through that kind of condition, struggling to walk, struggling to stand up. So as students and staff, we were thinking, what is that which we can do in order to see that Swami is relieved of that particular pain? We had a meeting. I had been the wing teacher for 10th standard for several years. So I called up the students and asked, see, we are all pained seeing Swami going through that particular pain. Can we do something? And let me tell you, the kind of love which Swami, children have for Swami is amazing. I can tell that I don't feel that they can have that kind of love even for their parents. Even though Swami would have interacted with them very rarely, to some people very frequently, but the kind of love which they have for Swami is amazing. And they are ready to do anything for Swami. So I asked them, what is that which we can do? They came out with various ideas. And we took the opinion of majority and we decided that the best thing which we can do, because we used to spend a lot of time in Mandir, we thought, why not we read Swami's life, Satyam Shivam Sundaram, part 1. And we thought, we don't need to wait for a auspicious Thursday to begin. Just, it happened on Sunday, we thought Monday, next day we will begin. Some boys came out with the idea that at the end of the day, after the night prayer, we will chant Hanuman Chalisa and pray Swami that he should cure himself. We will like to see Swami walking normal. That was the prayer all of us had. Boys took up this particular sadhana of doing Parayanam of Satyam Shivam Sundaram part 1. It went on very well. On Sunday morning, next Sunday morning, as we used to come for morning and evening darshans on holidays and festival days, some boys came and informed me, sir, we have already completed the Parayanam. Few more boys who have not completed, they will complete by evening. What next? When Swami will respond? I had no answer. I said, let us wait and see. We came back to hostel after morning bhajans. And you believe it or not, there was a surprise. Phone call from Swami informing the warden that he wants the school boys to come to Purnachandra Auditorium. The senior boys of the school should come to Purnachandra Auditorium. Believe it or not, this kind of invitation from Swami we never received, neither before nor after, exclusively.
Out of the blue. Only yes, the senior boys.
Yes, yes.
Out of the blue.
Yes. So the boys were very excited and they were all preparing. But in the heart of heart, they were feeling that the younger boys who are there, they will feel bad. After 1 hour, we got another call saying that Swami is calling young children also, that is the students of 8th and 9th, along with 10th, 11th and 12th. And we were thinking that maybe the students from primary school, maybe students from institute are also invited. But when we went there, we found that we were the only people called by Swami. Swami was undergoing a lot of pain. He was struggling to stand, struggling to move. But just to tell children that he is fine, just to make sure that children do not feel bad, he made sure that he came to Purnachandra. He stood on the stage and called each and every boy and very surprisingly started distributing watches.
Wow.
And to each and every student personally handed over the watch saying that I am very, very happy. All children were in tears, particularly the children who were doing this Parayanam. They were thinking that how magnificently Swami has showered his grace for just a small gesture of expressing their love for Swami and their prayers for Swami's well-being. After the distribution of watches were completed, Swami said, I am very happy. See, I could stand all through. I have no pain. Boys were in tears. He blessed everybody and we left. As we were coming back, when we saw the watches, you believe it or not, it was not the picture of Swami on the watch, neither the picture of Ganesha, which generally used to happen, but it was the picture of Hanuman, as they were chanting Hanuman Chalisa every day.
Wow.
So basically he tried to tell that, even though he is undergoing pain, but he is beyond pain. And that is the lesson he teaches us. We will be going through many difficulties in life, but we should not be showing the pain. And the method to overcome that also he has shown there, by getting involved himself in an activity. The moment we get involved ourselves in some activity, we forget about the pain. And this amply proves that he is really beyond this pain and pleasure.
In fact, that's what we have seen in Swami's life, and even in that discourse where he explained the concept of Brahmanandam. Swami starts off by narrating how there are so many stages of this ananda. It starts off with Manisha Ananda, Gandharva Ananda, Indra Ananda, Prajapati Ananda, Brihaspati Ananda, and all that. Finally, Brahmananda. But then Swami says that all these are attainable by man. Man has the potency to elevate himself to these levels of ananda, but Swami says for this, for someone to experience this ananda fully, what you have to do is you have to eliminate the I. And as you are mentioning, you know, eliminating the I is what we saw Bhagwan do it day in and day out.
And the only way to eliminate that I is you keep thinking what we can do for others.
Yes. You don't think about your body, body-mind complex.
Yeah. Just before he came back to Prashant Nilayam during that particular year after the hip injury, where he underwent the through operation. When operation was over and Swami has come back to Vrindavan, he was taken to upstairs room where he resides, yes. Used to reside in a stretcher. As he was going up, suddenly he calls the Satyajit brother.
Yes.
And he thought that maybe Swami is uncomfortable in that particular posture on the stretcher. So he went very close to find out what Swami wants.
Yes.
Can you believe? Swami has not mentioned anything about his uncomfort.
Yes.
Instead he said, see, the doctors have followed me. Make sure that they are given snacks and coffee. All the time thinking only about others.
Absolutely.
And this is the best way to eliminate our own ego.
Amazing. I think we really need to dwell on this a little more, because I think it is so elevating whenever we think about this. And what comes to my mind is a very beautiful rendering of this shloka, Brahmanandam. Let's listen to that and we'll dwell on this a little more.
Sadguru சத்குரும் தம் நமாமி.
Just that shloka is so uplifting, isn't it?
Elevating.
Yeah, as we were discussing, so we mentioned about how we have seen Bhagwan never attaching himself to his body. But you were saying that this is something that we can also practice in our lives. What are your insights on this?
Swami has exemplified this particular aspect in day-to-day life, particularly through service. He has inspired millions of people, and students who had the great good fortune of watching him from close quarters were inspired by this service aspect. And we find that the hostel life is so wonderful that everyone contributes his bit for the well-being of all. And some students are so inspired that they hardly bothered about their well-being or their comfort, ever ready to serve. Not just the duties which were assigned to them, but they waited for every small opportunity to extend their help. And this actually makes hostel life very pleasant. They are not concerned about their sleep. They are not concerned about their own food. They just want to make Swami happy by doing the service. And we find that in the process, at the end of it, they are so happy. Their performance in the examination is very good. It is not that they have given themselves to service, as a result their studies are affected. You find that the same students excelling in studies. So, whenever we ask boys how you are able to manage, their simple answer is that we serve Swami and in turn we earn Swami's grace. In fact, I remember one particular occasion, a devotee was praying Swami that, "Swami, please shower your grace on me." Swami said, "Buddhi ledu." And instead he said, "Don't ask for grace, ask for an opportunity to serve. When you serve, the grace follows."
Yes.
So ask that God should bestow upon you the opportunities to serve. And when we serve, and as we keep serving continuously, the way we serve, that particular process improves. And we start seeing Swami in the other person. The moment that happens, that can happen to anybody. And I have seen that happening even to students. They may be very young. They may be 14 years, 16 years, or 18 years, or 20 years. But for that kind of experience, I don't think that anybody will like to serve continuously. There are occasions, in fact, they are being scolded. They are being punished that they go out of the way to serve, but they are not bothered. Because they feel that if the other person is happy, Swami in him is happy, and in turn, Swami will bestow his special grace on them. There are boys, they have done extraordinary, exemplary service, and there were moments Swami has recognized it in course of time, and as this particular sloka says, Brahmanandam, he has given that kind of experience to students by taking them to Kodaikanal, calling them and bestowing upon them the infinite bliss which devotees used to experience in his proximity in the interview room. What not? Swami had every time a different way of blessing people which you have not expected. Just 3 days back, we had a human values class. Swami has blessed our hostel with an extension building.
Okay.
Swami has been kind that through Central Trust, they have spent 1 crore rupees and extended our hostel building. So we were discussing that special grace Swami has showered on school. And I was mentioning that, see, the old building was constructed with 2 crore rupees in 1995. And the extension itself has costed 1 crore rupees now. You can imagine the grace of Swami. And I was mentioning to them that, see, to inaugurate that particular building, Swami physically came. Now, since Swami has gifted this and that particular block is given to 10th standard students, I said, now it is our duty to make Swami happy. And what way we can make Swami happy? Very simple, that we will keep our surroundings so clean and we will dwell upon Swami as much possible that we will start feeling His presence. And Swami will have His own way of showing that He is present with us. Believe it or not, just 1 hour back this has happened, that in room number 30, from Swami's picture, Vibhuti started coming.
Wow.
Just 1 hour back, before I came to the studio, I have seen.
Amazing.
So, small effort from our side, Swami showers so much of grace to make us feel that He is with us. He is around us, guiding us, guarding us, and doing everything possible to make our life happy.
Wow. So amazing. When you mentioned about this hostel life, the thought that came to me is, if you see this shloka, as Bhagwan has explained Brahmanandam, there Swami says that when you think about the I, which means you are associating yourself more with the body. And Swami says, if you associate yourself with the body, you are actually distancing yourself from the ananda. Ananda comes when you actually are far from the body, when you are actually more removed from the body consciousness. That is when the real joy comes. Actually, it's a paradox of life that we actually want ananda, we actually want happiness, but we go after comforts and we go after conveniences, which actually attaches ourselves to the body, which means we are actually becoming more body-centered, more body-conscious, and that is what we think will give us ananda, but actually that is not ananda. Ananda comes when you are actually more
detached from the body.
Exactly. And as you mentioned the hostel life, that's what we see in the hostel life, because you have very minimum conveniences, especially in that stage of students' life and at that stage of their journey, where they are taught to lead a very, very frugal and disciplined life. And they experience so much joy. And they experience the joy not by through comforts and conveniences, but by knowing to be of use to others. I think that is something very beautiful. And very subtly, you know, without any philosophy, without any
classes. Or any gurukula, any sadhana. Swami made the whole hostel life in a way that if you are able to stick to that hostel life and follow the routine, you automatically experience the bliss. Which people used to experience through very intense tapas or sadhana in earlier times.
Exactly.
And when we say that the students, many of them have given themselves in service, it amply proves that they are not bothered about their comforts. They are not bothered about their food or sleep or things like that. Means indirectly they have been doing it. They were not aware of it, but the experience of bliss is same.
Yes. And in fact, if you see, that is what we also saw and continue to see in the ashram life.
Yes, very much. There are some very exemplary devotees who have taken Swami's teachings to their heart and practiced Swami's teachings day in and day out in their lives. If you meet them, the experience which you have in their company is as good as the joy which you used to experience in the company of Swami.
Yes. Amazing.
I recollect one great gentleman in our ashram, my name is Mr. Lal, who looks after the general stores.
Yes.
Came from Sri Lanka. The way he talks, the way he serves is so beautiful that if you are in his company, you would never feel that you have missed Swami. Because he is able to see Swami in every person he meets. The way he talks, the way he serves is a great inspiration. Way back, almost 20 years back, I recollect one particular incident took place. We were preparing for our sports meet function, and we were looking for a particular cloth for a particular item costume. I approached him and asked him, "Sir, when you will be free, when you can show the varieties of cloth which is available in general stores?" He gave me the time, 2:30 in the afternoon. I went to him. That was the time when the stores was closed. Stores used to open only in the evening around 4 o'clock. Such an elderly person, climbing all the steps, he himself opened the lock and opened the shutter, took me inside. And suddenly I find that in half an hour time, there was a music, signaling that Swami would have come out for darshan. So I said, "Sir, I am very sorry, sir. I am taking away your time of darshan." He said, "Why? Why do you feel so? You are also Swami. Serving you, I am serving Swami."
Wow.
And he took almost an hour time to show all the things, and when I was satisfied with the particular kind of cloth, he gave it to me, and then he said, "Let us go for darshan now." You believe it or not, the kind of joy which I experienced in his company, I never felt that I have missed Swami's darshan, and he never felt that he has missed Swami's darshan. Like that, we find several devotees who live in the ashram have led very exemplary life, and they have experienced Swami's love day in and day out.
In fact, as you mentioned this, I cannot resist mentioning about Sri Peddireddy Garu.
Yes, is another great, amazing person.
Someone who came to Bhagwan in the 70s. He was actually a professor of physics in a university in Orissa. And he came here, and initially Swami asked him to work in the university. Then he worked in the canteen, and then he worked in the planetarium. And during the mid-80s, when he was working in the planetarium, Bhagwan one day mentioned to him, "Why don't you also look after Sai Gita?" And so that is when he started to go to Sai Gita. And from that time, the affinity that he developed towards Sai Gita and Sai Gita developed towards him was so fantastic. He was telling that, you know, that relationship was so amazing. Sai Gita would know when Peddireddy sir would start from the canteen, and she would trumpet. And that was a kind of bond that existed between them. Anyway, that is one part of it. But what I would really want to bring out at this point is, all his life, from the 80s, Sri Peddireddy Garu was busy only in serving Sai Gita, and whatever spare time he found, he was looking after the canteen. He was a manager in the canteen and looking after Sai Gita. And for 40 years, he has actually not moved an inch beyond the Sai Gita shed. His world was restricted to Sai Gita shed and the canteen. That is what he did all his 30, 40 years of his life. For 20 years, he's never entered the Sai Kulwanth Hall, and he sat there for darshan. The only time he had darshan was when he came to Bhagwan along with Sai Gita. And frankly to tell you, I used to many times think that, you know, this man, how much he has lost in life. As a student, I used to feel like that. Because, you know, when you look at him, you know that he's not really so much concerned about his appearance. He's not someone who's concerned so much about his clothes. And he's like in his own world, and he's constantly busy serving. And I used to feel, "Papam, why is he doing all this service?" Because he's not even getting the chances. You know, we do a little bit of service, then we used to go, and you'd want to give a rose to Swami, get a picture, or you want some group photograph, you know, that was always there. You wanted something from Bhagwan. But here was a man who was serving, serving and serving, and not even getting anything from Bhagwan.
Not even darshan.
Not even darshan. Not even sitting in the first line for darshan. So, dear listeners, I want to pause at this point, and I want to let you know that Brother Sai Giridhar also has joined us in the conversation. Welcome, Brother.
Sai Ram Vishnu.
Sai Ram. Sai Ram.
So I used to feel that here is someone who has spent all his life in serving, and he has lost so much, and finally Bhagwan left And before that, Sai Geeta left. And then few days back, when I met him and I told him, "Sir, don't you feel you have missed something in life? Don't you have any regrets? You know, there are a lot of people who are now going to Badrinath, Kedarnath. You couldn't go anywhere. You didn't do anything in life, actually. Your world was so restricted." And he just smiled at me and he said, "What do you mean?" He said, "I am in Ananda. I am so happy. See, my mind, no? It is so thoughtless. I can't tell you how happy I feel, because slowly, no, it is just Swami's grace. It is just Swami's grace that I don't even have that desire for anything. I don't desire that I have to go somewhere. I don't desire that I need to fulfill this craving. I don't have anything. Every day, my mind is just becoming more quieter, 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 quieter. And I am so much in Ananda. Swami is everything for me and He has given me everything." I mean, when he was saying that, you could see with what joy and what conviction that was coming. And I really felt, what came to my mind is, you know, when Bhagwan, when students used to tell Swami, "Swami, why is it that devotees like Meera and Sakubai, they were great devotees of yours, and why did they suffer?" And Swami used to always say that, "Did they come and tell you that they were suffering? Did Meera come and tell you she was suffering?" And here, that day, this revelation came to me when I saw Pedireddy sir. Because outside, any onlooker would feel that here is a person papam, he doesn't have anything in life, he lives in a small room, he has not experienced any joys of life. But only when you put yourself in that shoe, if you are Pedireddy, then you'll know that I am actually in bliss. Why do I need all this other? For him, others are like trinkets. Why do I need all the other joys? What I'm trying to tell you is, the whole concept of Brahmanandam, it's a very esoteric concept, we cannot understand. But I think I definitely got a glimpse of that. Because he was someone who was not attached. In his room, there is nothing in his room. The room is as it was, I think, 40, 50 years ago. There is very simple looking bed. And that's all about it in his room. But he's always in bliss.
In fact, Vishu Swami's quote I was just reading a couple of days back in the college, you know, they write this thought for the day. And from a particular discourse in 1965, they picked up this quote where Swami says that, see, coffee, for example, it does not have joy on its own. For example, there are people who like coffee, who dislike coffee. There are people who like coffee with milk, who like, you know, the black coffee. Some people like it with sugar, without sugar. So Swami is saying that any of these materialistic things, it is we who define, you know, how we want to derive joy. Actually, joy is not coming out of it at all. Yes. The coffee by itself, if it had the ability to give joy, it should give joy to everybody equally. But it is actually the mind that decides what it wants to derive the joy from.
Correct.
And that is the, you know, beauty of what you're saying. Like in Sir's room, there is hardly anything, because we are so used to defining things outside of us, you know, that will determine our joy.
Correct.
But it is actually mind which is deciding.
Correct.
And somebody who has turned inward and who has simply given his life in service to Swami knows that that joy automatically springs forth. You don't have to do anything for it.
Correct.
And he does not attribute it to any other object. So there is no need. To have anything outside around you to give you that kind of a joy.
Just as we were talking about these, how Bhagwan has very subtly driven all these lessons into us in the hostel life, in the ashram life. Now, I was reading this book, which is written by Srimati Padma Kasturi Garu, Professor Kasturi Sir's daughter. And, you know, she was describing how Prashanti was in those days, how difficult it was in those times, especially the living conditions in the 50s when they came to Bhagwan. You know, of course, you had to come in a bullock cart, and, you know, they had the room which there was, the flooring was still to be done. Everywhere there was sand, and there was no bathroom in the room. The cooking had to be done through firewood and charcoal as well. No toilets, nothing. No electricity, no pipeline for water. It was a village life that they were leading. But she's saying, though there were so many physical discomforts, we just enjoyed Swami's love so much at that time. She's literally saying it was truly heaven on earth.
And this has been the experience of all devotees, those who have come with lot of hardships and led their life with lots of difficulties. The moment they had Swami's darshan, they forgot everything the next moment.
Yes. And the point there is here that physically they were away from a lot of comforts and conveniences which pertain to the eye, which pertain to the body mind consciousness. But here Bhagavan was filling them, just giving us a demonstration of where true ananda comes from.
In fact, we have ourselves been witness to this, you know, Swami's life, if you take.
Yeah.
When the comforts were minimum in Prashantinilayam, Swami gave himself to the devotees much more.
The maximum.
Even to the students. And once these comforts started increasing
gradually,
in both ashram and the hostels and all, then even Swami started withdrawing himself.
Absolutely.
Physically also he was telling us, more comforts, less God.
Yeah. In fact, there's some amazing instances of what Padma Kasturi madam writes, how in 1954 Swami created 9 lingams on Shivratri. It was exclusive opportunity that they had. Panchaloha Atma Lingam Swami is created and Swami is given to them. In fact, one very beautiful incident what she narrates is on one Vaikuntha Ekadasi day, when Swami used to materialize Amritam and personally serve to all the devotees. That occasion they were in the sands and Swami asked Professor Kasturi to bring a tumbler, and Professor Kasturi thought that Swami wants to drink water, so he was trying to pour water. In those days, whenever Bhagavan used to go to Chitravati, they would take this tumbler and also water in a jar in case Swami would like to at some time ask for water. So he was trying to fill water into the tumbler and give Swami. Swami told, no, give me that empty tumbler. And Bhagavan took that tumbler and kept it next to his mouth, and just one moment of gulp, one moment when suddenly from Bhagavan's body emerged, from his mouth emerged this huge ambrosia, this divine, ethereally smelling, fragrant liquid. Bhagavan said, this body is a Amrita Kalasha. Swami said, this body is a reservoir, it's of infinite reservoir of that Amritam. And from Bhagavan's mouth came out that Amritam, and Bhagavan distributed. I mean, very, very extremely few people have been blessed with that chance to partake that ananda. I mean, they physically, spiritually Swami gave that ananda, and even literally, filling them with that divine ambrosia. I mean, in so many subtle ways, Bhagavan has shown us where is, how to experience Brahmananda, where is truly the ananda. And whenever I think about all these different leelas of Bhagavan, one of those bhajans that keeps playing in my mind is Guru Mahima. Guru Mahima Gao, you can sing the glory of the Guru for eternal
period of time,
absolutely. Isn't that beautiful? Brahmananda Ananda Guru.
Very much.
And when we think about this sloka, after Brahmanandam comes Parama Sukhadam, which means it is the Guru that can grant the highest joy.
Yes.
And what is this joy? Bhagavan says, this is not the joy of physical well-being. This is not mental poise. This is not intellectual alertness. This is not sharpness of the senses. Swami says, the rishis declare that words return crestfallen after attempting to describe that state. Even the mind with its fast-moving wings of imagination cannot reach that state. The highest joy has its source and spring in the Atma. And that is Parama Sukhadam. And in so many ways, I feel that Bhagavan has blessed us. I think all of us who have had this opportunity to be contemplatives of Bhagavan, at least we have had flashes of what that joy is. Because you had the opportunity to see Him. You had the opportunity to touch Him. You had the opportunity to do something by which He rewarded you. An experience of that Ananda.
And in fact, some student had this wish that Swami should bless them with this kind of experience.
Mm-hmm.
We had a student by name Vivekananda Sahu.
Mm-hmm.
Some years back. He was a very good artist and very talented student, good in sports, good in academics. We should say an all-rounder. Along with all this, he had a lot of love for Swami. And that was the time when very frequently in his discourses, Swami used to say that you and I are one.
Mm-hmm.
So by the time he finished his graduation, this desire became very strong in him that he must get that experience with Swami saying. So he kept praying to Swami that, Swami, please give me that experience that you and I are one. And he kept praying for days and months and years. He finished his first year MBA. He was in second year MBA. And Swami has not granted that particular experience. And he just wanted only that and nothing else from Swami. And his prayer was, before he completes his education in Swami's institution, Swami should bless him with that kind of experience. Which he himself doesn't know. He just wanted to experience what Swami meant by saying, you and I are one. As he was a very talented artist, he was given the job of making the backdrop for the sports festival. And it was a massive structure. Around 40 to 50 boys were along with him, working day in and day out, almost for a fortnight, preparing it for the sports festival day that was to commence on 11th of January. He was so engrossed in the work because the whole responsibility was given to him to make sure that it is ready on 11th January morning. As a result, he could not take part in several sports competitions which he used to take part earlier. And he was a very good sportsman. He won many prizes and he received many prizes from Swami, Swami's divine hands in earlier years. This year he was so engrossed in that work, particular work, that he could not take out time whenever the competition took place to be part of it. The time went by. Finally, on 11th January, the whole big structure, massive structure, was ready and it was put up in the presence of Swami in the ground. And Swami saw it and Swami was very happy. He was so happy that on the next day he came to see that particular structure exclusively and these boys were around.
Beautiful.
And he expressed his joy saying that he is very, very happy with the work which they have done. And this boy had a satisfaction that they could please Swami. On 14th of January, we generally have on Makar Sankranti day, the prize distribution function. He being a great artist, he was called to decorate the Kulwant Hall for the occasion. So on 13th night, he along with a group of boys, they kept working late night. By the time he finished his work, it was around 3 o'clock in the morning. And during that particular time, when he was arranging the shields and cups and other prizes on the tables, a thought passed to his mind saying that this is my final year of studies here. And this year, I am not going to get any prize. But immediately he reconciled, saying that no, we could make Swami happy, and Swami was happy with our work. That is more than enough. With that thought, he went back to hostel, thinking that he will take rest for 2 or 3 hours before he comes back to Kulwant Hall to attend the function. As soon as he went and slept on his bed, after few minutes, he says, he was not sleeping. He was just about to sleep. Suddenly he finds that he is seeing his own body, and he was startled in first place. He thought that he is no more. Mm-hmm. That kind of fear gripped him. But suddenly he finds that he was sucked up, and as he was going up, he saw the entire creation, all the buildings, and several other things which you see from the sky view. He is seeing himself going higher and higher and higher. And a time came when he finds that there was sun and moon and so many other things. He crossed all of that and went very high. And he says that kind of experience was such that he could never imagine to have. It was such a blissful state, even though it was for a very short while. The kind of bliss which he experienced was beyond the description of words. Finally, it so happened that he finds Swami there, and Swami asks him to go back. And he kept pleading Swami, saying that he want to be there. And Swami said, no, you have to go back. And next moment he finds that he is once again coming down. And finally he entered to the body which was lying on the bed. But the experience was such that he was profusely crying with a different kind of reason. That was the bliss which he was experiencing. And suddenly he finds that everything around him is only Swami. He finds Swami in the chair, in the table, in the wall, and everywhere he is only finding Swami. The experience was such that he was not ready to share with anybody. And he felt that he doesn't need to go for darshan anymore the next morning, because he is only seeing Swami everywhere. Not only seeing in himself, he is seeing everywhere. This experience continued, and he covered himself with a blanket, and he was enjoying that for next 2 hours time. And after all the people left the hostel for the function, he felt that he too should go to Mandir, because there may be some help people require, as he was in charge of the decoration part. By the time he reached Mandir, or on the way, he finds that everything is only Swami. He finds Swami in the tree, in the street dog, in the beggar, in every place, everything which he is seeing, he was only seeing Swami. And he walked and came to Mandir. By the time he reached Mandir, the festival has already begun, and Swami was giving discourse. The whole place was filled with people. He could hardly get any place to sit along with the students. So he decided to sit where the car shed is there, and there was a TV which was put up there for people to watch the program. So he also joined them and he sat there and he was listening to Swami's discourse. As soon as he sat there, in discourse Swami was mentioning that students outside, they take part in various competitions and win prizes to get a name and fame. But my students, they don't want anything. They just want one thing, that by their effort, they should please Swami. And when Swami says he is happy, they are so blissful. They are contented. They feel that they have got everything in life. And then further Swami in the discourse, he said, for such students, I give the experience that I and they are one.
Wow.
And the boy was in tears, listening to the words of Swami, which he heard just as he sat. And he was thinking that this kind of experience is being achieved by the great sages and saints, with so much of sadhana. Here we don't do anything. Just follow Swami's instruction and give ourselves in making him happy. And in turn, he blesses us with that kind of ananda which he experiences every moment. After some time, a teacher happened to come there and said, he gave him a tray of gold medals and he said, take it and get it blessed by Swami at the end of the discourse. So he took that tray, and as he was approaching Swami from distance only, Swami was looking at him and smiling. As he approached, the first thing Swami asked him was, how was the experience?
Wow. Oh my God.
So the moment that happened, he was in tears. He just said, Swami, thank you. When he was asked afterwards what impact that particular experience made on him, and he says that he had that kind of, that experience lasted for next 2-3 years. Wherever he finds only Swami. And he feels that everyone is playing their role in a big drama which is directed by God. So there is no distinction of good or bad, big or small. And he finds that everyone is only the manifestation of Swami. Since we are not able to look from that angle, we get entangled saying that he is good or he is bad, he is rich or he is poor. But in fact, the same God dwells in each and every one of us, and he was able to experience it. So not only Swami lived that particular experience all through his life, but he has also made people experience that kind of ananda which has been mentioned.
Wow. Only a Sadguru can give that. When you think about it, is what tremendous blessing that the Sadguru gave to someone who is just a student. He just did what every student does. You know, just dedicating your moments, your effort to Bhagwan in a proper spirit. Just spending little, exerting yourself little more doing the work for sports meet, but doing it with a spirit of dedication. For that, the kind of reward that Bhagwan gave, which is something which, it reminds me of the experience that Ramakrishna Paramahansa gave Vivekananda, and that kind of, it's at that level. But that is how Bhagwan so freely gave us. And he continues to give. He continues to give.
Not only students, even to the devotees.
Devotees.
As you were mentioning about Pedaridis, sir, some time back, I happened to meet him. I have been given charge of looking after the quality of the laddus which were produced for Gram Seva.
Mm-hmm.
And he was in charge of the canteen.
When was this?
2004.
Okay.
So that particular Dasara occasion, I have been asked to see the quality of the laddus which are being prepared for Gram Seva. So I used to go in the morning and I find Pedaridi sir sitting there. If I go in the afternoon, I find him there. If I go in the evening, I find him there. I go in the midnight, I find him there. I was surprised, when is this person takes rest? So I very casually asked, after 3-4 days of observation, I asked him. That was the time, it was around 12:30 in the night, he was having the simple rasam and rice as his dinner. And when I asked, when do you take rest? He said, I don't find time. For last 1 week, I did not go back to my room to lie on the bed. Whenever I feel sleepy, I just sit on the chair and doze for some time, and again I am fresh. Then I asked him, how do you get this kind of energy to continuously work? He said, this is given by Swami. In fact, he said, during Swami's 60th birthday, he says, he did not sleep for a month, serving Swami all the time. And he is as fresh as we feel after long rest.
Amazing.
So these are the amazing devotees. By seeing them, you can understand how they have tuned themselves with Swami to such an extent that Swami literally works through them.
Absolutely.
But for that, you cannot see a person continuously working without rest.
Absolutely. In fact, now he is 80 plus and he has absolutely no disease. You are telling me that, you know, I don't have blood pressure, I don't have diabetes, I have nothing. And it is completely His grace. And as you are saying, you know, once you tune yourself to that extent, and at that time, it almost that when you don't identify yourself so much with the body, then automatically you're driven, your power is the Atma. You're driven by the Atma. You're charged by the Atma. Your eyes see because of the power of the Atma. Your hearts function because of the power of the Atma. And it literally happens that way. Once you are not so dependent on the body. In fact, that's what Bhagavan says in this Paramasukhadam. When Bhagavan is explaining, Swami ends that explanation saying, the person who's ever aware of the Atma in him and in all, he is the Sadguru. And that is what Bhagavan constantly gave us, that experience.
Absolutely. In fact, it is only Sadguru who knows how to put these most esoteric and, you know, very, very high level understanding, as most people talk about it, in most simplest forms. I remember how Swami used to shower his love on all his devotees and students, simply standing there in the Ganesh portico. This is like in the early 2000s, that is 2001, 2002. Yes. Swami would spend an hour, 1.5, explaining to us the efficacy of brinjal, why we should have the drumstick, which is so good for the heart. And he wouldn't miss the slightest of details in life. See, that is the beauty and the glory of Sadguru. Sadguru doesn't mean one who comes and only teaches you Vedanta and Upanishads.
Correct.
No, he is our very life breath.
He gives you ice cream.
He gives you, in fact, you know the story, right?
Yes.
When Swami asked,
he gives you chocolates.
Yeah, who is God? And when boys were giving very esoteric answers that he's omnipresent and he's omniscient, Swami said, no, God is like ice cream. He's pure like the vanilla ice cream. And he's cool like the vanilla ice cream. And when your prayers are really strong, his heart melts like the vanilla ice cream. See, that is the glory of Satguru.
Absolutely.
And to live with such an avatar and to merely ruminate on the experiences that he has given us, that Bhagavatam, that Sai Bhagavatam, is enough to, bring us in touch with that supreme joy, Paramasukhadam, as we said. Because his every move, his every word, his smile, his look, every aspect of Swami is so filled with bliss that even if one contemplates now on that, he's sure to experience this Paramasukhadam.
Yes, absolutely.
And then suddenly he would don also the character of a world teacher. I remember how he used to talk about all these simple things in life, like how many idlis did you have in the breakfast and all that. And suddenly he will don this role of the world teacher. And he once explained to us the most esoteric of ideas in such simple example. And Swami was saying, see, you all, when it is hot, you turn on the fan. What do you observe? When you turn on the switch, the fan rotates, then you have the breeze moving, then you are there who is experiencing the breeze. Isn't it wonderful? And then Swami went on to explain, see, the experience giver is the fan. The breeze or the air in the room is already there, and because of the movement of the fan, even the breeze starts moving around. So that is the experience. And you who is sitting there under the fan is the experiencer. So you have the experience giver, the fan, the experience of the breeze, and you the experiencer. But do you know who is God in all this? And then Swami said, the electricity is God.
Wow. Amazing.
You know,
terrific.
It is in the presence of electricity that there is this experience giver which is working, there is this experience which is happening, and there is this experiencer who is experiencing the whole thing. But in the absence of the electricity, none of these three things will happen. So Swami was saying that Sadguru, don't think that he is somewhere that you have to achieve him. Fundamentally, we live, we breathe, we eat, everything because of his presence. It is in his presence that we live, and in his absence there can be no creation at all.
Absolutely. Amazing. It's such a beautiful insight to always live with that feeling.
Absolutely.
I mean,
in fact, I ask this question myself many times. You know, I love food, as I mentioned many times, even in radio side. But when I eat the food, who digests the food?
Yes.
In fact, I might not even know the mechanism of digestion. So obviously, consciously, I'm not doing it.
Yes.
And if I look at various activities in my life, how things are happening, How my heart is beating. Swami says there is no holiday for the heart.
Yes.
Not even for 5 seconds.
Yes.
If the heart takes a holiday for
a minute,
you are in the ICU.
Absolutely. I mean, it's if you look at the heart, since you mentioned the heart, and we'll end with that, time is running out, but I just cannot help but marvel at that beautiful creation that is the
Absolutely.
Heart. And because it is an organ that right from the time we are born, and we are in the mother's womb, it starts, and it has never stopped. Even when it is growing, it has to keep beating. I mean, constantly. I mean, we cannot think about any machine like that. We cannot think about anything like that. And the amount of pumping that it does, incessantly, continuously. I mean, just for that reason, just like Newton said, just by looking at the thumb, I can say that God exists. The thumb is enough to prove that God exists. Because the thumb is such a magnificent thing.
Creation of God.
The amount of things. Because if you take your hand and if you want to do, just try to do many things that you're trying to do with your hand without the thumb. You won't be able to do.
Absolutely.
9 out of 10 things that you're able to do. Without the thumb you cannot do. Similarly, it is like that, you know, in every moment, in everything, there is that power. And if you recognize that, then I think we will be blissful at every moment.
In fact,
we'll be grateful at every moment.
There is one thought which I think we should conclude with, which one very senior devotee was sharing with me. When we asked him this question, how do we remain in contact with God, contact with Swami? And he said, see, fundamentally, you need to make your faith absolute and strong
yes.
that Swami is God.
God.
Because when you have that absolute faith, God is everywhere.
Wow. Absolute.
And Swami is then right now here with me.
Wow. Amazing. In fact, Professor Kasturi sir's mother, once she asked Swami, Swami, I don't know if I have devotion. I don't know if I have that bhakti towards you, Swami. Swami said, if you have faith, and if you have humility, and if you have patience, rest assured, know that you have devotion for me. You have that surrender for me. If you have faith, first is faith. If you have faith, and if you have humility, and if you have patience, then you definitely have devotion. So I think that is where our journey on the spiritual path starts with faith. All the experiences come after faith. And faith, the whole thing of self-realization, Swami said, starts with self-confidence. That first faith in that big S, capital S. Self.
Atma Vishwas.
I think that is where everything begins. And ultimately, that is what will take us to Brahmananda, to that experience of supreme bliss. So I think we will have to continue this in the next coming weeks, because it's really, it's such a fascinating subject. Whenever you think of Bhagwan as a Sadguru, and Bhagwan has given such a beautiful template for us to ruminate this shloka. So probably I will play this shloka once again, as it is rendered by our own students in Bhagwan's presence, and then we'll conclude this session.
Shanti, shanti, shanti. ब्रह्मानंदम परम सुखदम केवलम ज्ञानमूर्तिम द्वंद्वातीतम गगन सदृशम तत्त्वमस्याधिलक्ष्यम् एकं नित्यम् विमलमचलम् सर्वधि साक्षीभूतम् भावातीतम् त्रिगुणरहितम् साईनाथाय नमो नमः.
So with that, it's time to draw the curtains on this episode of Outside, Inside, Deep Inside. Thank you so much, dear listeners, for being with us all the day through this beautiful Thursday. We place our most heartfelt and sincere gratitude to Bhagwan for having us given us this another opportunity of sharing His love, His message, His music and His glory with all of you. If you have any queries or comments, please feel free to write to us. As always, you can write to listener@radiosai.org. I'm Team Radio Sai's Bishu. The time in the studio now is 10 o'clock, 10 p.m. and even as I sign off, you will continue to listen to a drama, Krishna Kuchela. It was staged in the presence of Bhagwan by the students of the Vrindavan campus in September 2004. So, please enjoy this rendering of Krishna Kuchela and immerse every moment of this beautiful gift of the present that the omnipresent Lord has given us by filling it with joy, filling it with His joy, filling it with His love. Thank you so much. Sit down.